Hello everyone, welcome to the Smashy Business Show. I am Abdul Majid Aman.
And I am Wed, and good morning. It is December 23rd today. It's Monday, so we're off. Hopefully we're off to a very strong start. How was your weekend, Majid?
It was good. It was really nice. The weather is good, so
yeah.
It's a very cozy feeling to be at home, stay at home, and even go outside. I went to this winter festival in Ibn Battuta Mall. Everything was free. Funnily, everything was free.
What was free?
There's like a whole Nickelodeon fest going on.
Yeah.
It happens till 29th, so there's a lot of days. You can still go. You just have to give your name, email, and number, and just tell the number of kids that you have. They'll put a band on the kid, and you can enjoy all of it. There's Santa.
That's so
there's
cute.
All the Nickelodeon characters. There's like four or five places where kids can come and play.
Yeah.
Like they have designed them around SpongeBob and all these characters. And then there's a whole gaming zone right in front of it. It's in parking 5, if I'm not wrong. So yeah, take your kids there. It's free. Just go enjoy.
That's nice.
And there's food stalls so you can have stuff. So yeah, free stuff is always good stuff.
Yeah. What's it called for my weekend? Oh my God, I had such an epiphanic moment this weekend.
Nice.
Let me tell you, it's because of the fact that let me just put this out there. Last week, every day of the week, Majid, I was running on 3 to 4 hours of sleep.
Oh.
No, I'm being completely serious with you. I was running on 3 to 4 hours of sleep, and that was, honestly, that was entirely my fault. I was just adding more to my load than need be. And I just I had this really deep conversation with my friends, and they were telling me, they were like, this is not good for you. You know, we say focus on one thing, focus on your full-time job, and do that really great. And you know what they told me? So basically my best friend was telling me, she was like, Ward, like my university professor, he was basically telling her, he was like, Sarah, like I have a PhD. He's a very well-established man, by the way. Like my best friend was telling me, this man, you never see him not wearing Laura Piana, nice cashmere. Like she went like, he's very rich. And he told them, he went like, yes, I am wealthy, but do avoid being burnt out. Because he said that when in his 30s, you know what happens? Not even his 30s, in his 20s, end of his late 20s, he said that because of how much he was overworking himself, he got a heart attack.
Oh.
Yeah, he got a heart attack. And then and then
so
she
you should
told
take
me,
care of yourself, right?
Exactly. No. And then basically what my best friend was trying to say to me was that, yes, I understand that you want to get a license and you want to get a car as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And you want to, what's it called? You want to save up for it as quickly as possible. But imagine this, Ward, if you overwork yourself, what's going to happen is that you won't even be in good health to drive the car.
Yeah.
And it was that deep realization. It's like, yes, you can do a lot of work. Yes, you can succeed, but not by beating yourself up so much over it that you don't even have the energy to do the things that you want with saving up. Like, you know what I found, by the way? I had all this money, but I wasn't even spending it because I was so busy all the time. Okay. Like, do you come across that?
I've written a book on it. I haven't published it.
You wrote a book?
Yeah.
Never knew this. He wrote a book.
I've completed my book. I have to like publish it someday, sooner or later. I will travel to Pakistan sometime in the near future.
Match it. So
I tried to go last year and find publishers, but couldn't find the time to actually meet them. But
that's
the main idea is don't die trying.
Is that the name of the book?
Yeah. Don't die trying. It's basically against the hustle culture that we see in the modern age where every influencer, every guy on the internet is telling you, oh, work till you're 30, 35, and then enjoy the riches that you've earned. No. My idea is just be consistent. Even if you start working at 20, 25, whatever, and you think you should only work for 10 years, don't live, give up your social life, family life, everything. No, you have to find the perfect balance.
You know, Majid,
because hustle culture is wrong.
It's so interesting that you say this to me, because this morning I was watching a speech by Donald Trump, and he was saying, you know what the cure to depression is? Work. Work so much that you don't have time to be depressed.
Nah.
And to be honest with you, he has a point, because can I tell you something?
Will make you depressed. That's the main point that I believe in.
You say this, Majid, but in the busiest moments of my life, I am honestly the happiest. I thrive the most and I produce the most. When I'm actually not doing that much, I don't feel good about myself. So, but I still think, don't die trying. Guys, this is a very exclusive piece we're getting here. He did not even tell me this outside of the studio. This is crazy. Just talked about it, trying.
And I realized I have my book written.
Wow. And even this morning, Majid, I was actually I was talking to Hisham, and I remember basically I was telling Hisham and Majid, like, you know, are you guys not scared of smoking, of destroying your lungs? But then I also told them that I actually had this grandma. Allah yarhamha, she died in her late 80s. So I would say she lived a very long, fulfilling life. And let me tell you something. She smoked every single day of her life. Like, ever since I was a kid.
It's very bad for you, by the way.
We don't recommend. I don't smoke.
No one should smoke.
She smokes every single day of her life. But the theory is, and what my family came to the conclusion of, is like, damn, like, no matter how healthy you are, it's all up to fate. And then Hisham made a really good point to me. He told me, like, okay, yes, Ward, she smoked her entire life, but she had a good quality of life. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? Like, we have a good quality of life. And then he said, no, like, they got good air. They didn't have social media. They didn't have their phones on them all the time. So it was like,
food was better.
Exactly.
More nutritious.
Yeah.
Look at all the recent World Health reports. Mm. Whatever report you find, you'll see that over the period of last decade, the nutrition of fruits and vegetables has gone down because there's so much artificial farming techniques like employed to make the productivity more. So the fruits are losing their vitamins, the vegetables are losing their vitamins, even the meat that you eat, sometimes it's so much processed and so much, it has gone through so much stages of freezing and normalization and
they
freezing
inject
and normalization.
The cows.
Yeah, so there's so much going on that right now, mostly the quality of life, but the quality of food that you intake, which is basically what you eat, right? What you eat is what you get.
You're right.
Yeah, all that stuff is actually the problem, to be honest.
Majid, you know, I noticed some lately in Carrefour, and honestly, I'll tell you my reasoning, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. They're selling blueberries for like 6 dirhams.
Yeah.
Like the normal box of blue, which there's a surplus of it, and they're just selling it for 6 dirhams. And the reason I specifically point this out is because whenever I go buy fruits, it's never that low. So, is it because it's their season and they're overproducing?
Sometimes season. Sometimes it's the quantity also. See, you bring them in, and they have like an expiry of 11, 12 months, but near the expiry. When like there's 2 months left, and obviously no one buys them at a very high price. It's 30, 35 usually, because I buy it for my son as well.
Yeah.
So now there's a lot of quantity there. Mm. So they'll sell at like, not the break-even price, they'll always try to get a profit on it. Mm. So they'll sell it like for 1 dirham of profit even, because they want to get the batch out as quickly as possible. So that's also a trick. So usually the sales stores that you go to, I don't want to take names, I'm not saying they're bad, but just whenever you're buying something and you see that at Carrefour or Spinneys or the normal mid-tier ones, you see something is at for 10 dirhams. And you go to a store and you see, oh, it's for 8 dirhams. How can it be? The retail price is 10, like fixed by the government, but someone is selling that same thing for 8. Just look at the expiry date. Most probably that thing is expiring in 2 or 3 weeks.
I always do that. Yeah. I always, especially when they're doing like really like large bulk offers on like chocolate, I am always so suspicious about it.
Instead of throwing it away, it's a better idea to reduce the retail price, reduce the profit margin, and sell it out.
It's not bad.
It's
not
a good
bad
idea.
Whatsoever,
because
like,
when you can eat it still. It's
when
not
I
expired.
Buy like a, what's it called? When I buy like a discounted 3 boxes of digestives, trust me, Majid, they're done in a week.
Yeah.
They're
so
done in a
week.
They're meeting that expiry date. They definitely are. And now, for our first topic of the day, we have big, big news for the sports world. So actually, $6.9 billion, which is basically attributed to sports, is so essentially $6.9 billion contributed to Saudi Arabia's GDP last year. And the reason why this is such big news is because, first of all, it was reported by Search Sports Investment. Yeah. And what it's really going to say, it's that Saudi Arabia, it's diversifying. And this diversification, it's definitely working. And we see it in their numbers. And it was also actually estimated that by 2030, sports is going to add $16.5 billion annually for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And this is extremely big. And even recently, you know, Saudi Arabia, they won the bid for For the, I'm just glitching a little bit. It's Monday morning. For the World Cup. They won the bid for 2034. So we're definitely seeing that this diversification plan, it's working.
Yeah, it's working. 6.9 billion is not a small amount. It's not a million, it's a billion. So yeah, that's working. When I joined her, the Esports World Cup was going on around August. That's like the inaugural Esports World Cup that they held, millions of dollars in prize money. Funnily and interestingly, Saudi team, there was this Falcon team, they won one part of it. So there is an increase in gaming and sports together.
Definitely.
If you talk about
and
it, because
I think,
somehow I think they're related because it's entertainment plus sports. So the idea is to get money from any industry possible.
Of
and
course.
Sports is the best paying industry in terms of in long term. Because they have a plan. They have to have a plan till 2034, till the World Cup.
And by the way, they've already executed this plan. And we see this by how they spurred the move of Ronaldo, Benzema, Neymar, the best players in the world. They got them to go to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And by the way, like I'm you know, I'm constantly online and I'm constantly reading, you know. Of course, we're constantly telling you guys that these football players, these famous football players, they moved to Saudi Arabia. But the reason why it's so big and it's so immense, it's because these football players in themselves, they have such a mass following. Like such a, like a godly mass following. Like when I speak to any man and they mention Ronaldo, they mention Benzema, Neymar, it's always this like godlike admiration and obsession. Like, for example, my cousin, Majid, who takes me to work every single day, bless his heart, every single time he gets his haircut, do you know who he's inspired by? Benzema. Every single time he gets his haircut. So these players, the admiration for them, it's not just the way they play.
Yeah.
It's the way they pay. It's the way they do their hair. It's the way that they dress. So the fact that they're in Saudi Arabia, I always see the discussion online. It's like, people are mentioning Saudi Arabia's name because of this.
Yeah.
So
so the main story in this is SRJ, which is the short form of Surge Sports Entertainment. It is formed by PIF. I was just looking at it. I just randomly Googled their website and it says this was established in August this year. And they basically are like a spending arm of PIF for sports investments. So they have a partnership with Professional Fighters League. They signed that in September. There's a gold sponsorship for Al Ittihad Club, the Saudi Pro League club. So they're doing a lot of things. So PIF has a special spending arm for sports investment only. That's interesting to know. Apart from that, they just hired a new CEO in October. So this guy is coming in. There's hundreds of things around Surge in sports investment. So just keep an eye on this spending
and,
arm. Like we see in Abu Dhabi and in UAE also, a lot of big companies, the big names, they have, again, giving the example of G42, they have a spending company for everything. 442 is there for data centers. MGX, which recently participated in XAI's funding. They are like the AI's spending arm. So they have different companies for different purposes. PIF is also doing this.
And you mentioned a really good point. You bring up PIF. You know, just recently we were telling you guys about how PIF, they bought a 15% stake in Heathrow Airport. So
and they're also planning, they're, it's in the talks. They're like reportedly they're going for Newcastle Airport as well. And they already own Newcastle United team.
So we're seeing how they're doing a complete takeover
of
all
the world.
Industries.
To be honest, they're doing a complete takeover of the world.
You never know. You never know,
honestly.
They're
going everywhere. They are. Wherever you see, the idea is the big fundings that are happening recently, you'll see at least one UAE-based VC fund or a UAE-backed VC fund or a Saudi company or a Saudi venture capital company. There's always some involvement from UAE or Saudi companies in these funding
rounds.
And
you know, Majid, it's, I think what's even more beautiful about all of this, and obviously in the moment we won't realize it, we'll realize it one day in hindsight, is we are a part of such a big movement in history. We are part of such a big movement of Saudi Arabia, you know, becoming such a power hub in the world. Because I remember when I was a kid, when Saudi Arabia was mentioned by my family, of course. It was always, you know, we really want to go to Hajj. That was that was the sole reason of why they would want to visit Saudi Arabia. And it's like, I remember when I had family members who are there, one of my really sweet cousins, Hala, she studies medicine there. I forgot the university, but it has a prince's name in it. But she studies in Saudi Arabia, and it's like, now I'm looking at Saudi Arabia so differently. You know, when I mention it, it's not just to say, I really want to go to the Hajj, inshallah. I want to see all of this. I want to see it in real time. I want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I think all the people want to be a part of it. And we saw it because of how many people went to the FII summit.
Yeah.
You know, we saw how many people went. Richard also went.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's such a big moment in history. And in a decade, me and you are definitely going to be looking back at this.
Yeah. And the Davos conference, which FII is trying to beat, or like the World Economic Forum, which happens in Davos, it is happening soon in January. It's from 20 to 24th January in Davos, US. So we'll see. I'll just have an eye on, to be honest, see who went to FII and who didn't went to World Economic Forum. I'll just keep an eye on the people who are going there and didn't go to World Economic Forum. Because that will tell you a story that people are preferring to go to FII rather than World Economic Forum. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on that.
That's crazy.
On the people who missed World Economic Forum but went to FII. It'll be a very interesting angle. So let's see, hopefully.
And now to expand onto our next topic. So Saudi Arabia's IPOs have actually surged in 2024. And for the first 9 months alone, they have raised $2.46 billion. And not just that, what this has done is that it's consequently propelled in seven individuals to billionaire status. So this key players include founders and executives from Fakih Medical Company, Al Musa Health, and the e-commerce giant Nice One. And you know what, the reason why this in itself, it's really great, it's because of the fact that the fact in itself that they're having successful IPOs, it's showing that investors have such a growing confidence in these Saudi Arabian companies. And honestly, as they should, they're doing really well. And all these companies, and billionaire status is big. That is really big. Because, you know, obviously, and I know it's like really simple math, but in 1 billion, there's 10, 100 millions.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's extremely great.
No, the interesting thing was seeing the Nice One guys there, Omar Ali Al-Olayan, he's the founder, and then Abdul Rahman Ali Al-Olayan, most probably he's a brother or cousin or something, or maybe an elder in the company. But Nice One is one of the brands that we also have been keeping an eye on, because they're an e-commerce business for beauty and cosmetic products. And an e-commerce brand growing so big, them getting a $1 billion evaluation. They recently, they went for an IPO recently, and they fixed their price at around 35 Saudi riyals per share. They didn't give a range. See the amount of confidence that they have in their product. Usually, we saw with Talabat, 1.5 to 1.6 dirham was their range that you can subscribe within this range. They didn't give a range. They were like 35 Saudi riyals per share, take it or leave it. So this is the kind of confidence right now that Saudi companies have in their products, in whatever they're building inside, the startups, the companies which are already established like 6, 8, 9 years, who are doing good and then going for IPOs, the startups who have been here for 2 years and then going for IPOs. They have so much confidence in the market. And the most interesting thing is their own local people who have the money and want to invest in something, they are coming forward. With Talabat, also we saw that they had like four cornerstone investors, and all of them were from the UAE. So Talabat got a very good response from their like home country. Saudi Arabia is doing that. If you have a company, you go for an IPO, and you're like, okay, I'll sell 15% of my stake. Saudi people with the money, Saudi investors, Saudi businessmen, Saudi venture funds, they'll be the first one to approach you that we want to invest
that's
in.
That's a, you know, that's a really good point, Majid, because you know, this brings me to the topic of like boycotts. So you know how like a lot of people boycott Starbucks? So I forgot, I think it was a Shia group. So Starbucks, it's owned by a certain group in the UAE. And I was speaking to my Emirati best friend, and she was telling me, she was like, I don't boycott, I still buy Starbucks. And I was like, why do you do that? And then she was like, because of the fact that you know, the people who actually own the enterprise here, they're family friends of mine. And it's like, we want to show them support, especially in a time like this where, you know, they're losing revenue because of the boycott. So you make such a good point here. And by the way, I don't just think that, you know, that stems from economic implications. I also think it stems from the culture in itself of Arabic hospitality and caring about one another. Because I even noticed this, and I told my best friend, I was like, I noticed every single time there is a homegrown cafe, like local homegrown business here, whenever I walk in, it's all locals.
Yeah.
No magic, I mean it. It's all locals. Yeah. It's all Imad
Asim. I've seen it actually.
And I told her,
bakery.
And I was like, right? And I told her,
I
was
Russell
like,
Kama, so I saw it firsthand.
I told her, I was like, I find it so strange because it's like, if we've seen it, because there's so many cafes here that literally open every single six months, like Concrete, Bakery. I'm not sure if that's how, by the way, you need to go try out their pastries. But because so many of them are opening, I'm like, how come they don't go out of business and all the locals are there? And then she looked at me and she was like, we like support. Each other. Yeah. We like supporting each other's businesses. So you made a really good point with that. And Majid was just discussing, you know, Saudi Arabia and how it's leading. And I think it's primarily because of their education too. And that brings us to our third story for today, which is as part of the Future Skills Initiative, Microsoft Arabia has trained over 14,000 Saudis in AI technologies, exceeding its initial targets. So the program equips citizens with tools to thrive in the AI powered economy. And this is so great. It really is so great. And these programs in themselves, by the way, it's really hard to gain access to them. It is hard to, because you might apply and you might get rejected. So the fact that, you know, they're providing this training and for so many people too, it's like usually in companies, by the way, like even when I try to apply, even in America, they have these programs. They don't accept a lot of people. Yeah. It's like maximum 10. And even 10 is a lot. So 14,000?
For AI, for UAE, they have a target of 100,000. They announced it at, where did they announce it? There was this event happening, and Microsoft announced that they'll train 100,000 government employees in AI.
Yeah.
So you'll have a very good AI-equipped UAE government soon. The plan runs by, like, till the end of 2025, so the whole next year, they'll be training 100,000 employees of government. Mm. So imagine the kind of workforce that you have in the government itself.
Of course.
Yeah, we saw His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, Dubai ruler. He recently caught a few people who had closed door policies. He's like, no, open your doors to everyone. It should be an open door policy. Everyone should be welcomed in the office. So we're seeing that they're not just sitting and saying, oh, everything is perfect. Our systems are perfect. So let's just let it run through this.
And I think what people also need to know is that for these actual initiatives to take place, it's the actual government, it's the country that has to spearhead them and basically make them a requirement. Because not only does Microsoft do this, also Apple does this. They have the Apple's Developers Academy. Yeah. And what they did is they specifically created it for Saudi Arabian women. And I believe they trained up to 20,000, which is even an even greater number in Microsoft. And they even do it in the UAE. But I would say that they do it in maybe a different method. We see it in, like, for example, the 30-day sports challenge that comes every single year. So what His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince of Dubai, did is that he made it a requirement. You see how it's like the leaders in place that spearhead these things? He actually made it a requirement for schools to enroll the 30-day challenge into school. And I did it, by the way, imagine.
Oh, nice.
And I hated it. You know why? I'd arrive to school at 8 a.m. They'd be like, come on, y'all. Let's go. 30 minutes. Let's go. And they'd actually change the activities every single day. So I remember there was like 30 minutes of us like running, what's it called? Was it, how long was it? I think it was 800 meters. So they'd be like, okay, come on. You guys are going to run around the school today.
Nice.
Yeah, every single day they changed the activities. Like you'd go somewhere different. You'd go to a different station or they'd make it at the end of the day. Do you see how smart this is?
Yeah.
So he made it a requirement for schools to do it. Like you guys, I'm giving you the order. You guys have to do the 30-day challenge in school. You can do it in the way that you want. And the schools did it. And we're also seeing it in how just very recently, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, he also launched the Dubai AI Week. And you know what he also did?
Next year,
he made
April.
It. Yeah, what I found even cooler than planning all these like summits, I think there's five to be specific, is that, again, he made it a requirement for all schools in Dubai to specifically actually incorporate it into schools and to make it basically the AI week in school.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm so passionate about this, Majid, is because they made me sit through all of this. Not so long ago, I was sitting through all of these. Like, whenever there was, like, some big event, trust me, in school, by the way, there would be, like, 1 hour in the day. They'd completely change our schedules, and we'd be doing it. So I think what's going to happen is, like, 1 hour every single day, like, you know, students are going to be taught about new AI tools, how to use it ethically. So that's what's really lovely about this, because obviously companies like Microsoft and Apple, they operate in every single country. But what I love about the leaders here is they always ask for more.
They're always trying
they
to get
always
better,
ask
and
for
that's
more.
That's the good thing. I remember Sheikh, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed's, this video is very viral. Everyone must have watched it. But he was like, I don't care if you're a gazelle or a tiger, just wake up and run. Like, so the idea is give your 100% as soon as you wake up. That's his idea. So when you run on these ideas, obviously you see government initiatives getting better, the government processes getting better, faster, quicker. Any problem that you have, just go to any center and they'll solve it in a jiffy. They'll be like, no time wasting, just do this, and thank you very much, your problem is solved. On the thing that you said about leaders, the surge investment report just reminded me of this one number that I saw. The report said, the first story that we did, if you missed it, you can go back, watch it again, the show. The first story, it also, the report said that 50% of Saudi youngsters between the age of 18 and 35, I don't know, they're counting 35 as youngsters. But there was a surge in physical activity. Mm. So in 2015, 13% of this age group was doing physical activity at least 10 minutes a day. Mm. Now it's 50%. So I guess sports, it's not
here.
Only, no, in Saudi.
Oh, okay.
So sports is not only bringing money for these countries. It's also building the idea that the
health
way you said he wants a Benzema haircut, but then he wants Benzema's abs as well.
Exactly.
So it's the main idea that culturally they want to do it. Sports helps people, but it also inspires you to become healthier as well.
And we need it more than ever because, you know, as Majid was, you know, just saying, like, you know, they're... Our food, it's not as it was before. And so, you know, we have to find some way to accommodate for that change. And that's by working out. But just on the topic of American companies, are you seeing what's going on in America right now with Luigi Mangione?
No.
What?
I didn't follow that story.
You completely did not hear about it?
I heard about it. I'm not following it that much.
Basically
he just killed an insurance CEO.
Just
right?
killed? Basically, he...
just as in just in time, not like just in...
He is... So CEO basically, Luigi Mangione, I believe he's a college student.
Yeah.
He was... He is allegedly suspected to have killed the CEO of...
The biggest insurance company
called... Something United.
United Healthcare.
Yeah, United Healthcare. And you know what's so interesting about the entire story? This man has such a large fandom. His fandom is insane, Majid. Do you know how many people are like...
Also, his story is very interesting.
It's so interesting.
That he had a sickness and he was suffering through
mom,
it.
Even his mom. His mom and what's even interesting about the entire story is that it's actually reported that he comes from a very wealthy family.
Mm.
And the reason why Americans are reacting to it the way that they are is because they're saying that even a wealthy family struggled to pay for their medical bills.
Can you imagine?
Really has a lot to say about United Healthcare.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the fandom he's developed. It's such a cult-like following, you know? They were all, I saw this argument where people were saying, I mean, imagine the amount of people who were hurt because of the CEO of United Healthcare.
Yeah.
And compare their lives and the amount of lives lost with the one life that Luigi Mangione allegedly took.
Funny thing is, I saw this post on Insta. I didn't go into details, sorry, but it was most probably TRT. TRT Turkey Radio and Television post, and they said that these CEOs, they like 5 years ago, they had already started bulletproofing their homes and cars, so they knew this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's right; it's completely wrong to kill anyone, but they had this idea that we're not giving insurance properly for certain things. Like in UAE, I am facing this problem with speech therapy for my son also. Mm. It's not covered, so I'm trying to get insurance which covers it. But at least you have an option here. It's not like a humongous amount that will be added to anything of mine. Mm. It'll just be a small amount that I'll pay extra, and then I'll get coverage for it. But the U.S. condition, we've seen so many series on it. It's, there's movies, there's series about it. So I guess those countries need to like come here, take a lesson from how everything is governed.
And you know, Majid, you know, when I heard you say this, like, I come from a very emotional part when I say this. The healthcare system here is great. And I say this because just very recently, my cousin had this issue where basically for months, she was very tired. She'd come from school and she just wanted to sleep all the time. And she's, by the way, she's somebody, honestly, I see her. She studies more than me, but basically she got this thing where they discovered that because of the fact that she has water in her brain, it was pushing on her eyesight and it gave her these eye issues. And because of the fact that my cousins, they just recently came from Sudan, the hospital actually, they just, not even insurance, they reduced the fees for everything. And in light of the fact that they're very aware of their circumstances. So this just goes to show that the amount of understanding and the amount of empathy that they have for people here.
Tomorrow, we'll talk about all these stuff
We'll talk about more. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and you can also find us on X, Instagram, and LinkedIn and YouTube. Thank you so much for watching. Have a lovely day.
Bye.